God's grace and peace be with you. So Marty and I just got back from vacation. We had a wonderful time. Some of you know that we took a couple of days and went up to Wisconsin to go bike riding on the Elroy Sparta Trail, which is one of my favorite places to ride. Except I forgot that at certain parts of that trail, the first 6 miles are uphill. So that was not the most fun part. But we had a great time. We went out riding both days. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but I'm 61 and 51 pounds overweight, so it was hard. The second day was a little, that 25 miles, that second day was tough. But when we had gone out, half of our ride, we went out, you know, around 12, 13 miles. We were going to take a break and then turn around and come back. And we're looking for a place to sit down and eat some lunch. And there's, you know, the bike trail, the bike path going off. And we're in the midst of some farms. And there's this little, you know, equipment trail crossing from one farm to fields on the other side. And there's this big, nice tree. It was a beautiful spot. And we thought, well, let's sit down here to eat lunch. And we sat down, and a farmer comes walking up. And I had an, oh, shoot, here we go again moment. Because about 8 years ago, when Marty and I were training to walk the Camino in Spain, we walked the prairie path here from Wheaton to St. Charles as part of our training, spent the night, and we're walking back the second day. Now, it was about 90, 95 degrees the day we were walking, and poor Marty had open blisters on his feet. You know, the blood was soaking through his socks. It was so hot. And so we were in exactly the same situation. We're on the trail. There's a little cross path. There's a farm and there's a tree. So we go off to the tree so that Marty can change his bandages. And a farmer came up. She drove up in her truck. She got out of her truck. She walked around. And I thought, well, how sweet of her to check on us. And she walked around the truck and she looked at us and she said, "Who told you you could sit on my land?" She was mad. We apologized as quickly as we could, and we got Marty's socks back on his bleeding feet and the boots back on while she yelled at us the whole time. And we apologized and headed off down the trail. So this time, when that happened, I just had this sinking feeling in my gut. And I jumped up from where we were sitting, and I said, "I'm so sorry. Are we on your land? We didn't mean to trespass on your land. If we're on your land, we'll leave." And he said, "Oh, no, don't worry about it. Yeah, you're on my land. Don't worry about it. Sit down. Rest as long as you want. You're perfectly welcome to sit under my shade. Those are my cows over there. If you want to go see my cows, you're welcome to go see my cows. Just walk slowly when you go up. But though I'm just going over to check on my cows in the woods." He said, "We had bikers come through here a couple of years ago, help me deliver one of those cows." I mean, he just went on and on. And it made my day. This farmer was absolutely delightful. Yes, we were welcome to rest in his shade. And he fed my soul. And when I came back and I was thinking about this text for this morning, I kept thinking about that, how he fed my soul. And Jesus' words about feeding and being the bread of life, and how he nourishes us, and how he invites us to nourish one another. That's what this morning's miracle is all about. It's one of five gospel texts talking about Jesus as the bread of life that we're going to be hearing about. And I thought how often we hear that, and we tend to think of it as kind of a heady theological thing, and how really it's enfleshed day to day on how we nourish one another or not. In theological terms, pastors will often talk about this as having either a theology of scarcity or a theology of abundance. A theology of scarcity is where your worldview is that there's really not enough to go around. The woman from 8 years ago lived in a worldview of scarcity. She had to protect and hoard what was hers. She didn't feel safe opening it up to share in any way or form. But the farmer that we met on Tuesday lived with a theology of abundance. He lived with a worldview that there was plenty, there was plenty, that his land could be shared with the people who came through. And as he demonstrated that for us, he shared with us stories about how abundance had come back to him. Again, talking about this amazing story of 5 bike riders from Chicago coming down the path when he was trying to help a cow deliver a calf, and the calf was stuck, and he couldn't get the calf out, and he didn't have the strength to turn the calf and pull it out by himself. And these 5 bike riders from Chicago stopped and helped him deliver the calf. A theology of abundance that sees the world as a place where there is enough. And when you release, then abundance comes back to you. There is enough. And that is what John is telling us in the gospel lesson this morning. That there is enough. There is enough, and the place and the way we find that enough is in Jesus. It is in Jesus that God demonstrates to us that there is enough. There is enough food in this world. There is enough kindness in this world if we will release it. There is enough justice in this world. If we will release it, there is enough grace in this world. There is enough money in this world. There is enough power in this world. There is enough for everybody to have what is needful in the reign of God as it breaks into this world. And we find that lived out and enfleshed and provided for us in Jesus, who nourishes us with hope, and who nourishes us with a theology of abundance, that there is enough, and we need not live our lives in fear. And that ability to not live our lives in fear has a dramatic impact, not only on us, but on the people that we just bump into day to day. I spent the rest of my day 8 years ago praying God's mercy on that poor woman who was so bound in anger that she just threw barbs of rage at everyone around her, no matter where she seemed to go. And I prayed for healing for her. And I spent the rest of my day Tuesday just sort of giving thanks in my heart for this wonderful man who must have blessed so many people biking the Elroy Sparta bike trail across his land. And the joy and the kindness that he placed into my being that day as he nourished me with kindness. And then Marty and I went back out on the trail, and there's a dad biking with his son whose bike had broken down not once but twice as we passed by. And so we stopped and loaned him tools. And all of that changes based on whether we are impacted and shaped by a theology of scarcity or a theology of abundance. And I don't know about you, but my strength for living with a theology of abundance, my strength for living with an open hand, it comes from Jesus. Now, there may be other places people get it in this world, but I don't know what they are. I know that I find it in Jesus' assurance that there is enough to care for me. There is enough of God's grace and mercy and love and wisdom to nourish me. And I find that enough in Jesus. And so that's what I proclaim. Now, when John tells us this story of Jesus, this beginning story is Jesus as the very bread that feeds us and gives us life, he continues this story with an odd one that seems kind of jarring. All of a sudden, it's another one of those Jesus getting in the boat, crossing the lake in a storm stories. Or Jesus isn't in the boat this time. The disciples are. But it's the boat on the scary sea, right? And it's like, what does that have to do with the bread of life? I think it's an interesting placement in the Gospel of John. Because, as you may well know, the lake is a boundary place. It's a border place. It's an area of transition from one truth to another. A storm on the sea represents the chaos that scares all of us, the uncertainty, the unknowing, the anything could happen here-ness of life that is so frightening that tends to make us want to protect. And the boat. Now, John's gospel is the latest one to be written, and I have to confess to you that I don't know for sure whether this image was already present for John, but you know that the image of the boat has been used in church tradition to represent the church, right? The boat represents the church. That's why our naves are shaped like we're looking at the inside of a bottom of a ship that carries us through the stormy seas of life. But here's what I find interesting in the gospel story. So the disciples get into the boat, and I'm thinking, was John talking about the church at this point? They get in the boat to travel across the stormy sea. We all know what that's like, whether or not we've ever been on an actual stormy sea or not. We're in this life, so we know what it's like. And they're traveling, and they're not making much headway. And it is Jesus who comes to them across the water. Now, the NRSV translation says they're terrified, and Jesus says, "Don't be afraid, it's me," or "it's I." But actually, in the Greek, Jesus says, "Do not be afraid, I am." Where have we heard those words before? I am. John does that intentionally, and our translation doesn't show it, because I am is the name that God gave to Moses at the bush. I am is the name that is transliterated. It is the name of God. And when Jesus says, "Don't be afraid, I am," he tells us that this is the power of the Almighty, the Creator, the all-knowing and the undying, who provides for us and gives us enough, and who also comes to us across the storms. And you notice what happened when the disciples in the boat are trying to get across that sea, and they've only made it for 4 miles in the storm, but when Jesus is with them, they immediately get where they want to go. Which brings us to remember, beloved, it is not the church that saves us. It is not the church that takes us where we need to be. It is Jesus. It is God. It is the author of life and the sovereign one over all of creation. The one who is needful is the one who says to us, "I am." And it's important for us to remember that while we love our church, and the church is important because the church is the institution that holds the mission of declaring God's will for us, that declares God's mercy for us in Jesus, the church is important, but we have to remember the church is not the one that provides for us. It's Jesus. And those things are different. And so as we come to this path of discipleship and of remembering how we come to follow Jesus and we are nourished by him, what we proclaim is not the church, but Christ that the church proclaims. So I have a risky proposition for you. You love that, don't you? The looks on your faces are like, "Now what?" I mean, she's got us singing that Pakistani Kyrie already. Oh. But beloved, the simple stories of how God nourishes us and nurtures us. For me, the story of that farmer, I've told so many people about this farmer who nourished my soul with kindness, and stories of other people's kindness and goodness as he lived on that land. He had been born on the ridge above Tunnel 3, for any of you who know the Elroy Sparta Trail and the 3/4 mile train tunnel we had just walked through. He was born there, and his farm is there. And he nourished me with story about his life and those who had provided care for him. And so I was wondering if you would be willing, as we go through the next 5 weeks with stories about how Jesus is the bread of life, I wonder if any of you would be willing to tell those simple stories, not big theological things, not deep spiritual revelations if you don't want to, but would you be willing to share the stories of those who have nourished you with life, the small acts of kindness, the testimony about that which is good and right, the testimony about those who live with a theology of abundance, who have revealed hope and faith for you in small ways or in big ones? Would you be willing to share testimony about the God who provides in the basic everyday acts of kindness of human beings who walk through every day on this earth with us, to nourish us, to remind us, to feed us with hope? Because when we are fed and nourished with compassion and grace and forgiveness and mercy and kindness, well, then we wind up spreading that nourishment. And the people around us get fed too. And when the people around us get fed, well, then people see people getting fed with kindness and they want to know where that's coming from. And just like those 5,000 people gathered around Jesus, people come to where they can be nourished with hope and kindness. So I'd like to know if you'd like to practice that here with people who already love you and people who already know you. If any of you would be willing to share a story of someone who has nourished you with a small act of kindness. You don't have to do a 20-minute sermon, I promise. But if you'd be willing to testify, it would feed all of us. It would be a gift and a joy. So 4 more weeks, if you'd be willing to do that, let me know. Shoot me an email, give me a call, say, I don't know if this makes any sense. Should I talk about this? I would be happy to talk with you about it. But we would love to hear where you have been nourished and to honor those who have fed you in the name of Jesus, whether they did it intentionally or not, but fed you with the life that comes from our God. Thanks be to God.